Good morning and welcome to Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is with us for a full hour. To be a part of the program, call us toll-free at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Send in questions by email at our website, WTOP.com. You can also submit questions on WTOP's Facebook page or via Twitter. Use hashtag AskTheChief. Here with Chief Lanier, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, Happy New Year. Thanks
happy
for coming
year.
In. Let's talk about last year. You had some pretty good numbers as far as crime statistics. Let's start with homicides. A real low number. For decades, we haven't seen numbers this low.
Not low enough, but much, much better. We're on the right direction. And hopefully next year we can cut that number in half.
It was 108 this year?
108,
and the year before was over
132.
132. So,
and the year before that, 144, and then up in the 180s.
And so why? Why is this? I mean, we know nationally we see kind of a trend going down, but it seems like there's been a steady trend in D.C. going down. I mean, can you take credit for that? Is there something that you can see that you guys are doing right that other jurisdictions can learn from?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that play into the reduction. And our reduction in the past 3 years is so much more dramatic than the national trend. We're down like 42% in 3 years. I do think there is a lot of the policing strategy is important. I mean, we have to focus our resources on your most high-risk violent offenders, and then also focus on kind of diverting some of those folks who are heading down that path. And we do a lot of different programs to do that. But I think to not give the police officers credit for that reduction would be an injustice to them, because they've put a lot of time into this.
And it's not just homicides. Let's talk about some of the other crimes that people are more likely to encounter, being robbed on the streets, sexual assaults, having their homes broken into. How did the city come out at the end of the year on those numbers?
You know, I think the ones that are most concerning to folks, the majority of those, you know, the burglaries, those are down, you know, breaking into people's homes. You know, your armed robberies, using guns and weapons to commit robberies on the street, that's down actually 12% again this year. Our single biggest problem, and accounts for about 55% of all my crime, is theft. And it's difficult for police to combat theft.
When you say theft, this is not somebody going into your house, but theft from
purse
snatching.
Well, you know, if you add in there, there's a classification for unarmed robbery, which is a robbery snatch. That means you're walking down the street and somebody snatches your phone from your possession. If you add that number in, you're looking at 65% of all my crime as theft. So people taking small electronic devices, mostly.
And what's the closure and arrest rate on those kinds of crimes?
Well, you know, we arrested about 1,050, I guess is the number for last year, for robberies. So we have very high closure, you know, number of robbery arrests that are being made. But the thefts, very low. Very low. People report thefts in a variety of different ways. But breaking into cars and theft of a purse a wallet from your purse while you're in a restaurant, that's a big number of our thefts.
And what about reporting? Do you think?
And a lot of people don't report.
Right. So what do you think the numbers are there as far as how many of these types of crimes go unreported?
I mean, it's really hard to say. It's hard to say. I mean, I think the business community is thriving in D.C. That's great for the city. But as you add more and more businesses, whether it be thefts from retail establishments or thefts from people's possession inside of restaurants and clubs, we see a lot of that, people leaving their wallets in their coats and their pockets.
Mike DeBonis of the Washington Post wrote a piece that I'm sure you liked very much, kind of recapping your year. And the point that he made is that you have this decrease in crime. At the same time, the population in the city is going up. And that's somewhat odd to see the population go up at the same time that crime goes down.
Yeah, no, I think the city's doing very well. And it takes a lot more time to police a lot more people. You know, the increase in population is not just looking at the increase in the population and the crime numbers, but there's calls for service. We run a lot of calls.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here for the hour taking your calls. When we get back, we'll talk to her about traffic enforcement and those traffic cameras. More after traffic and weather on the
back on Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier on WTOP Radio, taking your phone calls, emails, and tweets. To be a part of the conversation, call us toll-free at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Send an email at WTOP.com. Submit questions as well on our Facebook page or via Twitter using the hashtag AskTheChief. Now, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, let's finish up with the crime stats for the last year. Another place where crime stats were up was sexual assaults, and you just put out a notice this week. You're asking for the public's help in a pretty brutal attack on a woman who was carjacked with her child in the back seat near the Verizon Center. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, we just put out a composite drawing on that in that case. She was pulling out of a garage down on 7th Street, and while she was stopped in traffic, the suspect jumped in through the passenger side armed with a gun, forced her to drive to another location up in Northwest, I think Farragut Street, and then sexually assaulted her there. So I think the composite that went out late yesterday afternoon is a very good composite, and we're really looking for some information. You know, the one thing that she said that stood out was that the person has a Southern accent. So we have that flyer up and the composite up on our website. So for people out there, if you could take a look and see if you recognize them.
Is this an isolated incident, or do you think that this suspect is responsible for other attacks?
Well, when you have a stranger case, and that's, you know, the bulk of our cases, there's some association. People know each other in some way or another. So when you have a stranger case like this, obviously the first thing you think of is, you know, I wonder if there's any other cases, because people don't just wake up one morning and decide to commit an act like that. We don't have any other cases that we think are associated with this. But, you know, this is one of the most disturbing type of sexual assaults. You know, we just closed, I mentioned in our year-end press conference, we had the largest number of open stranger cases or stranger attacks were over in the 7th District. And those, to us, are the most dangerous. And we were able to make an arrest on one of those cases on December 30th. So, and we do believe, you know, we're looking now at all the other cases in that area where the suspect description matches, and obviously we'll use DNA and things like that. But that's one of the most disturbing cases that we see.
Let me ask you about the traffic cameras and photo enforcement. I know you're very fond of these, and a lot of residents are as well. Drivers and AAA, maybe not so much. Not so much. What can you tell us? Give us the numbers from last year. And can we expect an increase in photo enforcement in the district?
Well, I tell you a number that'll make people very, very happy is the overall number of tickets that are issued by the automated systems. That's photo radar, photo red light, is down pretty substantially. I mean, that's good for us. That means that people are modifying their behavior, which is going to reduce, you know, crashes. So from 2010 to 2011, we've seen photo enforcement tickets drop off from about 590,000 down to 420,000. So that's a pretty dramatic drop in violations. And that's the desired effect.
And in the same time, you've increased the number of cameras, I'm guessing, right?
We have.
In that same year.
Not only have we increased the number of cameras, but the type of cameras. One of the biggest complaints we get from neighbors is that, there are some places that will always be prone to speeding and red light running, and that's why we have permanent fixtures there, because in those long open stretches, Suitland Parkway, some of those for Sterling, when people do speed there and they have a collision, the chances of a fatality is very high. So we'll never move those cameras. They'll always be there. But we've now deployed some mobile cameras so we can move them around, because, you know, speed enforcement needs to be mobile. It has to go to different places. And the new cameras don't require an officer to be deployed.
And that's what a lot of people have seen. They see a stationary car with an officer sitting in there just looking at a computer screen, and it seems like a waste of manpower.
Right. And, you know, those officers are on overtime. They're not street cops that are pulled out of the neighborhoods. They're on overtime. But I'm going to leave some of those cars out there because they actually are a crime deterrent.
And so what can we expect as far as an increase? Do you have any numbers of how many more we'll see this year?
Well, we just rolled out the mobile units, and I think there's 10 of those. We just rolled those out. So no more big jumps in the immediate future. And we kind of watch the technology, and as you know, we upgraded our red light cameras to digital, you know, so we'll look at the technology, and as new technology comes out, we'll put together, you know, plans for how we're going to increase, but no big plan for increase.
The other violation that people call in and ask about regularly are hands-free.
Distracted
driving tickets. Can you give us the numbers on those for 2011?
Yeah, distracted driving tickets are actually, in 2010, we did about 14,000. In 2011, about 12,000. So down a little bit from last year. I mean, it's kind of hard to say whether people are getting the message. You know, I just don't know. But that's a lot of tickets.
And you consider that, are most of those for using a cell phone? Because I know you call it the distracted driving law, which is actually what it is. Mm-hmm. Everybody refers to it as hands-free because we think most of them are for being on the cell phone. Do you have any data on how many are actually cell phone related and how many are?
No, because of the categories that we use is distracted driving, there's no way to kind of sort out, but I would venture to guess from what I've seen are mostly hands-free device.
And while we're on statistics, I know you had a lot of DUI checkpoints over the holiday season. How many arrests did you make?
In a 9-day period between the 22nd and the 31st, we made about 56. That's DUI, DWI. But I was out on New Year's Eve. Let me tell you this. There was a lot of people downtown Washington, D.C., and a lot of them were drinking. What I saw was an awful lot of cabs and an awful lot of sober ride. So I was pretty impressed at the lack of drunk drivers on New Year's Eve.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is here taking your calls and emails. We'll get to the phones right after a look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier is with us on Ask the Chief this morning on WTOP. We'll be getting to your phone calls now at 877-336-1035. If you have a question for the Chief, 877-336-1035. You can also send in a question on our Facebook page or via Twitter using the hashtag AskTheChief. Here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, let's talk to Angela. She's calling from the district. Angela, you're on with Chief Lanier.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Chief, and congratulations on a great year. I think you do a wonderful job.
Thank you, Angela.
I have a question concerning North Capitol Street. I live right off of North Capitol Street, and I travel that road often. And I noticed between Michigan and Harwood, you've got two cars sitting there. And I know it's a long stretch, and the speed limit's 35, so you want to monitor that. But south of that, of Michigan, the speed limit's 25, and there are houses everywhere, and no one's sitting there monitoring traffic. And it's like a Indianapolis Speedway going down that road, going toward the Capitol. Will you be doing anything to kind of slow traffic down along that stretch?
Actually, that's a perfect example of why we moved to the smaller portable units. There are certain places, as you can imagine, you notice when we use the cars, we actually create a little concrete pad off to the side because, you know, we have people that run into the back of these cars that are staffed with police officers. They get a little distracted. So there's areas like the area you're talking about where it's not conducive to placing a car on the side of the road that could run the radar. So we have to use the small mobile devices that we can deploy out. So that would be a perfect example of where we would use that.
Let's get another caller in here. We have Lloyd calling in. Lloyd, you're on with the Chief. Lloyd, are you with us? Lloyd is driving. Lloyd wanted to ask about the use of sirens during funerals, during funeral processions, and whether they're allowed to use sirens to clear traffic as they make their way through the city.
You know, we just finished kind of updating all of our orders for different types of escorts that we do and processions and things like that. And, you know, there's really no reason to, in most escorts, to run through red lights and things like that. In a funeral procession, using an air horn or the siren to clear an intersection to keep a procession together is permissible. But it is not, you know, what people would envision as just a, you know, running lights and siren through the procession.
Let's talk to Steve. Steve, you're on with the Chief.
Hi, Chief. Thank you for everything you're doing and your dedication.
Hi, Steve.
I'm calling to get your perspective on the value and challenges in managing the increased bicycle traffic, and particularly the Fenty created program on the bike rentals. I bike to work a lot, but I'm a regular cyclist. I own my bike. I wear a helmet and mirror. I'm actually shocked at how few people I see who rent those red bikes have a helmet or a mirror or seem to know how to ride on the road.
Yeah, no, I've seen that too. I tell you, if you talk about the bicycle lanes, and that's one of our biggest challenges. We've been very fortunate that we have not seen an increase in fatal collisions with bicyclists. But if you just think about where the bike lanes are run through the city, where bike lanes run through left-hand turns intersections or right-hand turn intersections, the bike lanes are, you know, a little bit tricky for both drivers and the bicyclists. But, you know, we've increased significantly, quadrupled the number of tickets we've written to people who, you know, block bike lanes. I think we did about 2,000 tickets last year on people who block the bike lanes. We've also increased our tickets to the, you know, pedestrians and for drivers for colliding with bicycles and pedestrians. So it's going to take a while for the culture to kick in. But I've seen the same thing out there, Steve. I've seen people wearing flip-flops and sundresses with no helmet riding down the street.
What's the law, Chief? Are you required to wear a helmet?
No, you're not required to wear a helmet. You know, and bike share, Capital Bike Share, over 1 million bike rentals last year. That's an amazing number.
You see them everywhere, and you see tourists, business people, every kind of people are using them. Anyone who likes statistics, I guess, is going to like this show because we're getting a lot of year-end statistics out. But you were talking about crashes with bicycles. What about pedestrian accidents? How did we end up for 2011 down, as far as pedestrian accidents?
Amazing
cars?
Down. We had 14 pedestrian fatalities last year and 11 this year. Our number of total fatalities was up slightly, and I'll tell you what was behind that is we had two or three crashes that had multiple victims in the car, two or three people killed at one time. So just a slight increase overall, but pedestrian is down and bicycles stay the same. We had two bicycle fatalities.
Let's get another call. Jimmy is calling from Northeast. Jimmy, you're on with the Chief.
Yeah, how you doing, Chief?
Hi, Jim.
I was calling because I want to know, is it possible to get a scared straight program in D.C.?
A scared straight program?
Yes.
So what do you have in mind? You know, we do a lot of youth programs and intervention programs where we take a group of high-risk kids, and we work with them on a lot of different interventions. We take them on trips to, DC jail, and take them around to talk to, you know, medical personnel. But is that kind of what you had in mind?
Yes, yeah, what I had in mind. Because they'll drive the school bus, and I know a lot of them would be a good candidate, you know.
Yeah, it's a good idea, and it's effective in some cases.
So how do you get, if say this gentleman knows some kids, some at-risk kids who might benefit from a program, how do people get people into a program like that?
Typically, they come in through our youth division. People will contact our youth division. But if you're interested in sending me some information, you can send it to me directly, kathy.lanier@dc.gov.
Let's get another caller in here. Kenneth, you're on with the Chief. Go ahead, Kenneth. Did we lose Kenneth? Kenneth was asking about people who are parking in the curb lane but open their doors into the traffic lane, somewhat blocking traffic for extended periods of times, and whether there's any policing of that as a way of keeping traffic moving.
Well, typically when we have the open doors to a traffic lane, our interventions is after a collision has occurred. That's where we most often see those citations written. You know, we're trying to focus the entire agency more on traffic management around the city. You know, that's something that most urban police departments don't do as well as, like, state police, because that's kind of their primary thing. So we're kind of revamping our whole curriculum and our focus on traffic management. So that's part of that.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here until 11 o'clock, taking your calls, emails, Facebook questions, and tweets. More with the Chief after traffic and weather.
This is Ask the Chief on WTOP. Metropolitan Police Chief Kathy Lanier is with us, taking your phone calls, your tweets, and emails. The number to call in is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com. Submit questions at our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, some email questions that we've been getting. Let me run through these. Somebody is asking for an update on a case that happened where there were three 1D officers who were suspended for allegedly assaulting a man outside the Lotus nightclub. This listener believes the officers are still on leave, but wonders what the resolution of that investigation is, why no one's been charged in that.
Yeah, I don't have an update on that. I'd have to check and get back. I mean, I do know the case that they're referring to, and I do believe the officers are still off, but I don't have the latest.
And then
typically those cases, the allegations because there is an allegation that there was excessive force used, we'll go over to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and that takes some time for that review.
Another case involving a police officer. This was a female officer who witnessed, I believe it was her boyfriend, commit a murder and then initially lied to police officers, telling them that she didn't see anything, and then she finally came around and admitted that she did witness mm-hmm. what happened. What's her status?
You know, I don't know if there's been charges brought against her or not at this point. I believe they have placed charges, but I'm not sure. But I know that we immediately placed her on non-duty status.
And so this is again the same kind of thing. Why these take so long is
yeah. But in most cases, they go over to the U.S. Attorney's Office. That review can involve a lot of things, from grand jury, so it can take some time. But that's usually the largest chunk of time. Our administrative investigative process takes about 90 days.
One of our Facebook listeners wrote in and says she moved to 3rd Street Southeast in Anacostia last year and saw plenty of police presence in her neighborhood and made her feel safe when she got off work. And now she's not seeing as many patrols in her neighborhood.
Mm, well, that was, you know, that's one of our summer focus areas. So we really had a flood of resources there over the summer, which is one of the reasons I think we saw such a dramatic drop in violent crime over there in the 7th District. But the lieutenant that runs that area does a great job. So he still has resources over there, but what's difficult about that area is a lot of private apartment complexes, too. So to get the saturation of those complexes, they hire off-duty officers for security. So she's got a combination of resources over there.
Our conversation about the pedestrian fatalities and the bicycles has sparked a lot of calls. So I'm going to try to condense them into one or two questions here. One, are bicycles considered pedestrians? Do drivers have to treat a bicycle like they would a pedestrian?
Well, bicycles are considered vehicles, actually, in the definition of the law. But people do have to yield right away. The regulations are pretty clear that, you know, bicycles and bicycle lanes. That's why I said we had this huge increase in tickets for blocking bicycle lanes. So bicycles and bicycle lanes are like pedestrians in a crosswalk.
And then what about the other questions that have come out of this about what about bicyclists who don't follow traffic laws, traffic signals? They ignore stop signs. They run red lights.
Oh, we write them tickets, too. I don't know if I have that statistic with me. But, you know, we write them tickets, too. And that's one of the most dangerous things I see, especially downtown, middle of the day. A lot of bike couriers weaving in and out of traffic, going through lights. They're really not only putting themselves at risk, but a lot of other people.
As a former bike courier, I will tell you that
really?
You're trying to make money.
Really?
You're trying to get out there and make some money. You know, time is money in that business. Talking about downtown, let's talk about the Occupy DC and Occupy Washington movement, one of the biggest stories of the year across the country. Mayor Gray, I believe by now, has officially asked the federal government to reimburse the city. Can you update us on the cost for police coverage so far and just how much longer do you anticipate this going on?
Well, we've seen some reductions in the number of people with the colder weather. So the McPherson encampment is a little bit smaller, but they still do a lot of activities. I mean, they're still out doing a lot of marches and things like that. So it's still a resource issue. But, you know, Special Operations Division handles, you know, all protests and demonstrations around the city, and they do that every day. So that's kind of what they do. We're a little over $1 million in cost, but that I actually, when I do that calculation, I'm including, you know, it's only about 10% of it's overtime. I'll use overtime if I feel like there's going to be an impact on district resources, like on December 7th when we had a very large movement and they had a lot of traffic blockades and we had to make some arrests. So, you know, I held over district people so I wouldn't pull resources from the neighborhoods. 90% of that is on duty. So if I'm using SOD folks from the district that normally would be handling demonstrations anyway, I do factor in their salaries, you know, the cost of that manpower as well. So over $1 million.
Now, the union has been steadfast in saying that you have been deploying resources to cover Occupy DC at the expense of the safety of the neighborhoods.
That's ludicrous.
And what is ludicrous?
I'm sorry, but that's just crazy.
Let's break it down into two parts. One, is crime up in the neighborhoods during the Occupy movement?
Well, is it up in the neighborhoods during the Occupy movement? Is it up from October 1 to September or December 31st? Well, we've had an increase, but it's not due to the Occupy movement. At most, the most number of police officers from a district that I have pulled to deploy for Occupy. We had, and typically they're on standby. We'll take like two officers per district and have them on standby, and if they're needed for events. But typically, the most of the Occupy events are very small. We've had only a few that are. So it has nothing to do with crime. We see seasonal spikes in crime all the time.
So the second part of this, and I think you've kind of answered this, and the union sent a letter to the mayor about this point, that they say, yes, in fact, there's a you are deploying more resources from the neighborhoods to cover Occupy D.C., and that's what's leading to the uptick in crime in the neighborhoods.
He might want to take a criminology class. I'm just saying. To say that the Occupy movement's causing a spike in crime in the districts is just kind of crazy.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is here until 11 o'clock taking your calls, emails, Facebook, and Twitter questions. Now look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
Our conversation with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier continues. This is Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. More of your phone calls coming. If you have a question for the chief, call in now at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com or use Twitter, the hashtag AskTheChief. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, last month when you were here, you made some news and you really set the Occupy Twitterverse on fire. There was an incident at the convention center where some Occupy protesters were blocking traffic and several of them were hit by either one car or two cars, were sent to the hospital. You said last month that you had reviewed surveillance videotape of both of those incidents and that you were sure that the drivers were not at fault and it was clear that the protesters stepped in front of these cars. I got calls, emails from several people saying that that's just not the case, and including one person who was a witness to the incident that says he's talked to you personally and has told you that he has not been interviewed by your investigators. And so a lot of these, you know, protesters who were there are crying foul, saying, you know, they want to see this videotape that exonerates the drivers.
Well, I'll give you the last update that I can give you on that case. We have interviewed 14 or 17 additional people who said they were witnesses to this event since the original accident report was taken and tickets were issued. At this point, there is no evidence to support writing citations to anybody else. And at this point, our investigation is complete, and it will be up to the insurance company to determine if there's any additional fault that's going to be placed. And that's typical for any accident investigation. And if he didn't get interviewed, when we interviewed, you know, 14 to 17 additional people, I don't know how he didn't get interviewed unless he just didn't return a call.
And what about the request? I've made a request on behalf of the press. We'd like to see that videotape. If there's videotape of this incident, why not release it to the public and let everybody just settle it right there? Case closed.
I'll talk to the investigators about the video, but I've seen it, so you know I'm pretty comfortable with it. I'll talk to the investigators about getting it released.
Let's get another caller in here. Larry is calling from the district. Larry, you're on with the chief.
Yes, chief. How is it legal that a D.C. traffic enforcement or parking enforcement can write a citation for no front license plate on a vehicle that's registered in Virginia, not in D.C.?
There is a requirement in the district for having both tags. I believe if your state doesn't require that same law, that the ticket shouldn't be issued. I would contest the ticket.
Well, I did, and they came back and said that I was liable. And they cited 4221 and 4223, which specifically state that it has to be a D.C. registration. And it's not. It's a Virginia registration.
Right. I would take that out with the Department of Motor Vehicles or traffic adjudication and pursue that because that's not correct.
Let's get another caller. Bruce is calling. Bruce, you're on with the chief.
Hi. Easy one for you. I see scooters, not mopeds. Not motorcycles, somewhere in between, showing up without license or with license plates and then taking them off and putting Velcro or having them on Velcro, pulling them off as soon as they pull on the sidewalk. It seems very unregulated and dangerous and like they're ducking some kind of requirements. I just was curious about your thoughts on enforcing motor vehicle regs on scooters.
Well, they're not supposed to be riding them on the sidewalk. I'm not sure what the
I've actually seen this.
People from stealing it.
And I think that's the thought that I got is that they are parking on the sidewalk, and when they go to park it, they throw the license plate either they take it with them or throw it in their lock compartment so that it doesn't get stolen. But what are the, which scooters have to have licenses, and which, is this a matter of the size of the engine?
Yeah, it's the 50 cc's or 80 cc's or something like that. I mean, I'd have to look at the regulations. It's been many years since I've enforced
that. But they're
that.
Not to ride on sidewalks.
They're not to ride on sidewalks, no.
Let me ask you my favorite sidewalk question, and that are the, what are the, you know, I'm making the motion. The little machines,
yes.
You walk, you stand up on.
Segways.
Thank you, geez. Mark Lewis, our anchor, is laughing at me. He's having fun with this. Yes, the Segways. Are they allowed on sidewalks?
The Central Business District does not allow them on sidewalks. They are, you know,
and that's
downtown
K Street, right around the mall and whatnot.
Yes, because of the, just because
do
of the
volume.
Do
you enforce that? Because I'll tell you, that's where you see them, and they're on the sidewalks all
Lord,
the time.
Lord, we've had such a battle with that. Yes.
So you are enforcing that.
Yes.
Let me ask you about a press conference you had recently, Operation Manic Enterprise. Tell us about this.
This was a lengthy investigation. We worked it for over a year. It was an undercover operation. We call it a kind of a reverse thing, a storefront type operation, where we had undercovers who posed as part of the criminal element, I guess is the best way to describe it. And the goal is to get guns off the street. And as you well know, guns are usually associated with drugs. And during the course of this investigation, we came across some very, very dangerous individuals. We had Mexican cartel folks involved in this investigation. One group of those individuals we were dealing with were actually doing home invasions, bank robberies, armed robberies. So it was very successful. At the end of the day, is, you know, $7 million worth of drugs, guns. We did another one of these operations 2 years ago, and the take in that case was like 125 guns. We had well over that this time.
Let me ask you about you and your contract. Last month, you said you were in negotiations with the city to renew your contract. It's up soon, or maybe it's up. What's the status of your contract?
My contract's still in place, and it's in place through April. So, you know, I haven't finalized any new contract at this point, but we still got some time.
But you plan on saying there's nothing?
Yeah. I think I'll probably be here a while.
The Washington City paper ran a story about the term double-dipping officers. This doesn't happen just in D.C. It's happening around the country. But these are officers who either retired, but then you rehired them back, so they're collecting their pension at the same time. They're getting paid, and you raise some officers' salaries at the last minute so that some officers could avoid, I guess, a cutoff in the pay raises. What's your response to the city paper piece?
Well, first of all, the information in the city paper wasn't all accurate. You know, they gave a salary for district commander. Commander Hickson is like 177. What they failed to include is the fact that the offset is in place. So he's one of the lowest paid district commanders in the city because of the offset. I think there's some value. I have three employees that I retained that were rehired retirees, and they were rehired because of their expertise, because we need that. I mean, these are really tough positions that they're in. And I think to the fact that they were hired and told that it was all perfectly legal when they were hired and that there was no problem, and then to come back a few years later and just fire them, I don't think that's the right thing to do. And, you know, I think adjusting their salaries somewhat, all of them took a cut in pay after the adjustment, but I just don't think it's right to treat employees that way.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here till 11 o'clock. Now traffic and weather on the 8th.
The final minutes this morning with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier on Ask the Chief on WTOP Radio. Time now, if you have a question for the Chief, to get on the phones, 877-336-1035. It's 877-336-1035. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Let's get some more callers in here. Let's get Renee. She's calling from Laurel. Renee, you're on with the Chief.
Much for the good job you're doing, but I have a concern. Have a very close friend who had a high-end car stolen. Your officers recovered it and brought it back, and then the thieves came back the second time, but in a small gang, and attempted to steal it again, and they were caught. They were actually caught in the process of doing that, and some of them, I think, were taken in. But then they came back the third time and cut up the tires on the person's second vehicle. And it seems like it's a revolving door because they're back in the neighborhood again. What are you doing? Are there any plans to help reduce this business of car theft and retaliation and that kind of stuff in the neighborhood?
Well, actually, car thefts are one of the crimes we've had a lot of success in. It's down pretty significantly in the district. And if you want to stay on the line and give my assistant the specifics of the case, that's an extremely unusual situation. And, you know, I remind people all the time, we make arrests, but we don't make decisions of whether somebody's held or released. That decision comes from the U.S. Attorney's Office or from the judge or, you know, someone else. So, you know, a lot of times we make arrests and a person is released and people get angry with the police department. I don't have any real influence over that decision.
Chief, we got an email about the transgender, the attacks on transgenders last year. The Washington Blade, I believe that's what it's still called, listed that as their number two story of the year, that there was a spike in attacks on the transgender community. What's your message to the transgender community about what you're doing in response to this uptick?
Well, I think there's been a couple of things. I think that we've got much, I know we have much better reporting now. I see that in looking at the daily reports. But, you know, it just, and this is not specific to the transgender community, but it applies to any community. The biggest vulnerability, just like I told people, don't walk around with your iPhone in your hand. You know, we've had a lot of attacks on transgender members of the community that are engaged in prostitution. And just like prostitutes from any community, and taxi cab drivers, for that matter, people that predators believe have cash on them, who are out at night, who will make an easy victim. That's where we've seen the biggest vulnerability. And we'd like to see all of those folks that are in that high-risk environment try and find ways to increase their safety and help us out, because that's a very dangerous situation.
Let's get another call. Harold, you're in Southeast, and you're on with the chief. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Chief. Thanks for taking my call. You're doing a good job overall. My issue is the red light cameras. It seems as though there's a push to write more tickets. Crossing that little hash, you still will get ticketed. You can take it down and fight it if you want. They're still going to say pay it. So what I'm asking is, can your folks be a little more lenient on issuing those tickets when they come down? Because I had one, two, really. I did pass the hash line. That's a fact. I passed it. However, I did not pass the red light. I stopped before and still issued a ticket. Another one, I stopped and turned right, but I did cross the hash light, the hash mark again, before I knew what was actually making the camera go off. I'm just asking, can your guys down there, whoever's processing those things, look at the camera, look at the film.
Harold, one of the things we've done to try and improve the way these citations are issued is we move from still photos to digital. Digital film, actually, digital moving process, and that has helped to eliminate that as an issue. And we've upgraded the cameras around the city. But in terms of the adjudication process, that's.
So the red light cameras are actually taking video now?
We can run it as a video. We can run sequence of the photographs that will run like a video. So we can actually see if the car continues through the light versus.
Or as he said, stopped, right, just be across the line, but stopped in time before he got out in the intersection. let's get another caller in here. Carolyn is calling from Silver Spring, and you're on with the chief, Carolyn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a concern about the speed trap on Military Road. I go through there frequently in the a.m. hours because I'm coming from work, and I see both sides of the vehicles that are sitting there, and one has a clipboard up at the window, and another one has the visor down. What are they doing?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. The first round of technology that we purchased for the mobile speed enforcement does require an officer to be in the vehicle. It's a technicality. They really have to just make sure. I mean, they listen to the Doppler sound of the radar, and they, do photo shots. So they were required to do that. The newest generation of photo enforcement that we have now does not require an officer to be present. Now, I choose to leave officers in cars in certain areas because it's been a benefit to us to have officers over there. And they are officers who are off duty and working on an overtime detail, so they're not being pulled from the neighborhood. But I have to have, in those sites, I have to have officers in the car.
Chief, a real quick question. I remember on the anniversary of September 11th, and after that, we were on a heightened state of alert. Has that now been lowered? Are we back to a normal state of alert?
Yeah, we actually went back to a normal state of alert. We stayed at a height, we have different tiers of heightened alert. We were at our highest alert for about a week, and then we started gradually bringing that back down. We did so in phases, but we always stay at a much higher level here than I think most other areas.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, thanks for joining us each month. We will see you next month. Now another look at traffic and weather on the 8th.